Interlude 2. Nightmares. Sleep did not treat Mace kindly. The dark oblivion of a dreamless night brought him no peace. There were no longer hours of unawareness where his whirling mind closed down. Now it was as if a part of his consciousness stood sentry, a lone guard on the grim border between wakefulness and slumber. Ever watchful, the darker veils of death to return. It had all been stolen from him once, a few seconds marked by the bright blossom of pain, and life was gone. He was not about to let it slip away so easily again, but every time he closed his eyes it was there, waiting for him, a squat storm on his mental horizon, distant and threatening. With each passing moment, the fear would grow, building to the point where he found himself torn from the clutches of sleep to sit, gasping and sweat-drenched, in his familiar bed. With a groan, he rubbed his eyes, looking around blearily at the vivid sunset colors that splashed through the open window. Despite his terror, he had managed to sleep the afternoon away. Even if his mind felt drained, at least his body was rested. Besides, it was getting better. Every night he forced himself to close his eyes and face the breathless fear, and every morning he awoke to taste life in each lungful of air and feel it surging through his veins. Reaching out, he picked up his glasses, pushing them onto his nose as he let his body take stock. Gracia had left the window open, making the most of the dwindling summer warmth. And the breeze played with the curtains and twisted invisible fingers through his hair. Birds were singing, trilling to one another as they defended their territory and fought over food, and behind that symphony was the ever-present drone of Central. Grabbing the sheet, he wrapped it around his waist, walking to the window and looking out across the world. Green leaves had rusted, turning brown and gold and touching on a million hues in between. Summer lingered on in the sunlight, but he could tell from the thrill of age-old instinct that this was the last of it. Soon enough there would be frost on bare branches and snow falling from heavy clouds. He would be here, he determined. He had already missed so much, and this blessing of life returned was not something he would ever forget. Alicia, his little angel, was already growing up, taking steps to understand the world he and Gracia had brought her into. Pride was a constant torch in his heart, burning bright for both his daughter and his wife. It was easy, preferable even, to make those shallow, empty promises that nothing would ever separate them. He had sworn to always be mindful of danger. The career he had chosen was by no means safe, and he had made every decision with due consideration to the consequences, personal and greater. In the end, it had made no difference, and both of his girls had borne the pain of losing him and carried on when others might have given up. He was not so sure he could be so strong if his Gracia left him to raise their daughter. He knew he would be helpless in despair if anything ever stole his baby girl away. There had been help, of course. Gracia had told him that they had never been alone. If she ever needed anything, she only needed to call the office and someone would be there. She laughingly mentioned the time one winter when the entire staff had turned up to fix a burst pipe in the roof, or when Alex Armstrong had cut down and removed the massive cherry tree in the garden after a storm had snapped the trunk. "Sometimes," she confessed, "I would make more problems for them to help me with. I think it made them feel better because, in a way, it meant they weren't forgetting you. Besides, they're all so good to Alicia." Mace shifted, smiling sadly to himself. It was humbling to know how much of an impact he'd had, not just on the life of his family, but his friends. It should have been difficult after Ed brought him back. It should have been a mad, rushing world with no place for him. But instead, it was like slipping into water. They had all kept his place, either deliberately or unconsciously, and the true miracle of what had been done faded away, forgotten in the blink of an eye. It was easier to pretend that he had never been gone, or that he had just been sent away on assignment. Easier not to think about the truth. Until a short time ago, he had been nothing but an almost gone corpse and a slowly fading memory. When he stopped to think about it, the surreality of his situation was almost laughable. He was probably the only person in the world to have come back from the dead. So many people wasted the one life they had looking for a way to live forever. And perhaps he did not have eternity, but thanks to Carmine's twisted plot and Ed's determination, he had a second chance. Being in investigations always stretched the limits of the imagination. There was very little that he would not believe if given enough proof, but he would be lying if he said that this had been easy. To him, it was as if no time had passed from the moment he had been shot. His body had just switched off, ceasing to connect with reality in any way. It was like blinking, only to open your eyes and find that years had passed. Supposedly, people who woke up from comas felt the same. It had taken him days to convince himself that what was happening to him was real, and even now he found himself breathless with the amazement of it. People went through their lives somehow ignoring the multitude of changes that occurred every day, not just those around them, but in the places they lived. This Central was not the same city he had left behind. It was somehow edgier, pushed forward by the constant acceleration of industry. It was certainly busier. He did not remember it being this crowded when he had passed away. The army, too, had changed. Back under Bradley, it had been a fat, lazy organization, content with its leader and the knowledge that the way forward was clear. Now there were divisions and pockets of discontent. A lot of generals knew that Hakuto was being a fool, and the man himself seemed content to enjoy the wealth of his position and ignore his responsibilities. Roy could definitely use that to his advantage. Mace quirked an eyebrow. Perhaps he should do some digging. All it would take is the right rumor and the right ear to undermine any remaining confidence in the Fuhrer. With a sigh, he crossed his arms, scowling at the horizon. That could wait. There were bigger issues at hand, and besides, it may not be necessary. Within a few days of his return, he had asked a few delicate questions, and it came as no surprise to him that several of the older generals were in quiet, steady support of Mustang. Some when, during Mace's absence, his friend had gone from being seen as an upstart young general to someone eminently more suitable for the position of Fuhrer. Perhaps not this year, or the next, but one day. Of course, he would get there regardless of any backstabbing peers in his way, but it was easier if those with influence were approving, rather than threatening. It seemed that Roy had done all right without him, after all. He had not been demoted or downtrodden, and he had controlled his tendency to find comfort at the bottom of a bottle. The guilt was still there, hidden from everyone except those who knew him best, but it was a tempered, solid core to his ambitions, rather than a dead weight. There were times, too many times, when Mace had expected to find him dead one morning, finally defeated by the burden he carried around and refused to let go. It was good to be wrong. "You'll get cold," his wife's gentle voice made him look over his shoulder. She stood in the doorway, watching him with the most blissful smile on her lips. She moved with steady, practical grace across the room, placing the laundry she carried on the bed before wrapping her arms around him. "You'll just have to warm me up, then," he said, voice dropping to a husky growl as he pulled her close to his chest, relishing the perfect fit of her body against his. The top of her head came to just under his chin, and he buried his nose in her hair as she chuckled, rubbing her cheek against his shoulder. He dipped a hand under her shirt, feeling smooth skin and the perfectly tempting curves and dips of her body. This was what he had missed the most. Not just the sex, but the partnership. Perhaps he had not been aware of the passage of time, but he had been without his Gracia's love and understanding for far too long. She knew him better than he knew himself, and could read any nuance of his emotions. Without her to come back to, adjusting to life again would have been nothing short of impossible. A low, breathless moan caught in her throat as he pressed her closer, letting her feel just what she was doing to him. "Bed?" he asked, nuzzling the soft, tender skin above her pulse, blood surging in his veins as she arched her back. "Alicia's home from school," she whispered, "and you know as soon as we get into the best bit, she'll have something to tell you that just cannot wait. I should have woken you up sooner." The regret in her voice was genuine and truly gratifying, and Mace stifled a gasp as she scratched her fingernails gently across the taut, sensitive skin of his stomach. "Tonight?" she asked quietly. As if he would say no to that. Gracia stretched up on tiptoes to kiss him before stepping back, straightening her blouse and running her fingers through her disheveled hair. Her face was flushed and her dark eyes glowed appreciatively as she trailed her eyes down his body, lingering over the rather obvious bulge that the bedsheet was failing to hide from view. With a quick shake of her head, she glanced back up to his face, giving a hot, secretive smile that was all his before she slipped out of the room. Blowing out a sigh, he headed for the bathroom. He would not trade having a wonderful daughter like Alicia for the world, but Gracia's statement was right on the money. His little angel seemed to have some kind of sixth sense for when her parents were trying to spend some quality time together, and invariably interrupted. Gone were the days of spontaneous sex. Every encounter took careful planning and a surprising amount of ingenuity. Still, he thought with a quick smile, it was always worth the extra trouble. After a quick shower, he got dressed, grimacing as he dithered between civilian clothes and his uniform. In the end, he compromised, wearing his shirt with the sleeves rolled up and the familiar blue trousers. He just knew that if he opted for his normal clothes, there would be an urgent call from the office. At least this way, he could still be comfortable, and if trouble cropped up, he could be ready in minutes. It was a harsh way of life, one that Gracia understood and accepted without question. For Alicia, though, things were more difficult. Even now, when she was far beyond toddlerhood, she would still frown and pout if her daddy was called away. Perhaps it was even worse than it had been before. After all, how could he explain to her just how miraculous his presence was? When he had died, she had been told he was never coming back, but she had been so little that she had not understood. Even now, he was not sure she grasped what death meant. Foolishly, he hoped she never would. He did not want his daughter to have to go through that kind of pain ever again. A smile crossed his lips as he stepped out onto the landing. He could hear her piping voice from here, talking away without pause as she informed her mother of her day. Gracia was answering as best she could, but it seemed whatever Alicia had to say didn't actually need a response. She must have heard him going down the stairs because, with a clatter of bright, shiny shoes on the kitchen floor, she trotted out to meet him. Alicia squealed in delight as he swept her up into his arms, tickling her gently with the stubble on his chin as he planted a loud kiss on her cheek. Her laughter rang out through the house, so good and pure that his heart swelled with joy all over again. "How's my girl?" he asked, grinning as she stole his glasses and balanced them on her own nose. "Did you have a good day at school?"
"We learnt about fish and how they breathe water instead of air," she said, proclaiming the fact as if it were gospel, rather than only a half-truth. "Miss Knight says that if we're very, very good for the rest of the week, we can get a pet goldfish in class."
His daughter carried on, gratified by his exclamations of amazement and interest, barely pausing for breath as she wiggled out of his arms and put his glasses on the table before wandering off to get her latest painting for his approval.
It was the work of a few seconds to wipe her greasy little fingerprints off his spectacles and put them back on. No doubt she'd take them again sooner or later. For some reason, they fascinated her. Gracia smiled, handing him a cup of coffee. "She's missed you so much. I know it's hard to believe, but when you were..." She hesitated, obviously hating to remember the time he had been dead. Gone. She barely spoke at all. The only person who could get her to talk about her day was Ed. She stood on tiptoe, pecking him on the cheek before leaving him to Alicia's tender mercies. With a quiet sigh, he sat at the kitchen table, trying to ignore the heavy, aching clench of his heart. As happy as he was to be back here, in this house, and with his family, he couldn't help but blame himself for causing them so much pain. If he had been more careful and taken fewer risks, then maybe. He rolled his eyes to himself. The outcome would probably have been the same. What good were recriminations and regrets now? Stretching his legs out in front of him, he took a fortifying gulp of coffee. He knew that, as a father, he was intolerably doting. Alicia was everything to him, and he never made any secret of the fact. Still, the fact that she had spoken to Ed after his death was surprising. Al, yes, he could see that as plain as day. Even as a suit of armor, Al had been easy to trust and confide in. But Ed was prickly and defensive. Even at the best of times, Mace would not exactly call him approachable. Still, that was his little girl, always seeing the best in everybody. Alicia pattered back into the room, a sheet of paper daubed in bright colors and a thin book clutched in her hands. He watched her approach, automatically noticing all the little differences in her appearance. The chubbiness of infancy was ebbing away, hinting at the potential for sculpted cheekbones and a strong, determined jaw. She had her mother's soulful eyes and petite nose, but she was already tall for her age. He really should take more photos. Now more than ever, he could almost imagine the woman she would become. God, he would do everything in his power to make sure he was around to see her potential become reality. "Miss Knight says we have to read aloud," Alicia informed him, something in her voice hinting that she thought this was a waste of time. "Will you listen?" She waved a thin book, depicting a rather boisterous and boggle-eyed kitten on the front. Before he could reply, the ring of the phone cut through the house. The shrill, demanding noise made his heart sink, and as he glanced at the clock, evening was drawing in, and no one from the office would be calling unless it was an emergency. He heard Gracia pick up the receiver, her soft voice turning warm as she recognized the speaker on the other end. Still, from her quick and competent answers, he knew the call was for him. A few minutes later, she put her head around the door, a wistful smile on her lips as she sighed. "It's Lieutenant Hawkeye for you. She says it's urgent." With a rueful nod of understanding, he got to his feet, pausing to ruffle Alicia's hair. "I'll be right back, darling," he promised, not missing the doubtful look in her eyes or the pout on her lips. For half a second, he was tempted to ignore the call and grab his daughter close, to pretend that there was nothing else in the world but his family. Yet he knew too well that Hawkeye did not exaggerate, and she would never call him unless his presence was truly required. His gruff greeting was met with a curt apology for disturbing him, but he did not miss the sharp edge in her voice. Mustang trusted this woman with his life, and Mace had always thought she was the perfect choice to keep Roy in line. She did not get her reputation by being easily frightened, and yet there was something, some faint tremor she was trying hard to hide that kept coming through in her words. "I've already contacted the Brigadier General, but I don't expect it's long before your department gets involved, sir. Besides, this might be linked to the issue with Carmine." Quickly she described what she had found, her lack of detail telling him far more than her words ever could. The presence of alchemical arrays and human remains was enough to cause anyone in the army concern. Public panic had to be avoided at all costs. And there was always the chance that it was the result of one of their own, state-certified alchemists going astray. "I know the Brigadier General Mustang would appreciate your presence." Mace nodded absently, before realizing that she couldn't see his gesture. "Of course.
I'll need to be there anyway if I'm going to run the right kind of interference between Roy and Hakuro. I imagine the Fuhrer has been informed.
Yes, sir. The words were simple enough, but he could hear the hidden thought in her tone of voice. She knew, as well as he, that Hakuro would not care until the corpses were piled up on his doorstep. There's a car on its way to collect you. It should be at your door within the next 20 minutes. Mace looked over his shoulder and hesitated, seeing Alicia standing in the kitchen doorway. She was watching him carefully, looking far older than her actual age as she gave a small, sad smile. Taking a deep breath, he turned back to the phone.
Thank you, Lieutenant. I'll be there within the hour. I'm afraid there are a couple of other matters I need to attend to first.
He could almost feel Hawkeye's understanding radiating down the line. The woman never missed a trick. Very well, sir. I expect we can control the situation until then. The line clicked on her farewell, buzzing angrily in his ear before he replaced the receiver and turned back toward his daughter.
Do you have to go to work? She asked, her pretty little brow knotted in a frown.
Even though it's nighttime?
I'm afraid so, Angel. But I have enough time to hear you read if you want.
He grinned as her face lit up, and she grabbed his hand, dragging him back towards the kitchen. If he had learned nothing else, it was that the little moments like these were precious. For once, the army could wait. The car pulled to a halt, the driver obeying the instructions of a grim-faced private. It was not a soldier Mace recognized, but that meant nothing these days. He smiled to himself, promising that he would get to grips with the changes in staff at Central Command in the coming weeks. Rank was meaningless. A private could come in just as useful as a general one day. It was all about who you knew and who owed you a favor or two. He waved off a mumbled apology from the driver and exited the car, smiling warmly as the private saluted in deference to his rank. There were soldiers everywhere, each wearing the stony expression of men paid not to ask questions or think for themselves. They were keeping the public at bay. And weren't there always the curious few attracted to disaster? He glanced over the modest crowd for signs of trouble, but seeing none. They were simply waiting to see what would happen next. The slaughterhouse stood on an incline at one end of the square, a grim, brooding building that overlooked everything else. There were tunnels that led into the sewers beneath, down into the heart of Central's underworld, and it was one of these that had been cordoned off. "Report?" he asked kindly, feeling a pang of sympathy as the young man looked awkward.
"Sorry, sir, but I've just been informed to maintain the periphery and keep my eyes looking out rather than in."
The lad didn't look much older than Ed, and he licked his parched lips before leaning forward with a conspiratorial air.
"It's bad, though, sir. Whatever it is. It's got everyone on edge. Makes them angry or sick or both."
Mace nodded, knowing that the sound of someone retching would carry across the paved area far more clearly than any words. Beyond the periphery of the soldiers, he could see Roy's staff. They were huddled together, standing with the familiar unease of people unsure what to do for the best. He caught Havoc's eye and waited patiently as the young man trotted over, reassuring the private before leading the way. Cigarette smoke trailed out behind them, emanating from the battered dog end clenched between Jean's teeth. He sucked on it as if it were the only thing keeping him sane, and he didn't even flinch as some more ash drifted away from the tip.
"Stinks to hell, and that's just the slaughterhouse," he muttered by way of explanation, flicking the butt away and reaching for another immediately.
"Have you seen what this is all about?" Mace asked cautiously, reading between the lines of the younger man's expression.
Havoc just shook his head, and then shrugged.
"I've got an idea." He waved a hand vaguely in the direction of one of the large drainage culverts that led under the slaughterhouse. "Bones and things."
"Animal?" Havoc just looked at him, and Mace knew it was a futile hope. Animal bones wouldn't cause this kind of upset. Besides, Hawkeye had mentioned human remains over the phone.
Some of them were, Jean said at length. There were other bits. Skin and... things. He swallowed, and when his eyes met Mace's, they were dark with sorrow and horror. Not big bones, though. Kids. Teenagers. Nothing full grown.
Kids?
His echoed question was dry and rasping, and his confusion and curiosity gave way to the plummeting chill of nausea.
How? Bones means that they've been dead a while. Their parents.
The nausea solidified into something greasy and vile as his mind worked out what wasn't being said.
They're not old bones, are they?
No. Hawkeye's voice was steady, and her face utterly expressionless as she answered his horrified question. Mace looked at her in surprise. He had been so engrossed in getting the truth from Havoc that he hadn't heard her approach. She was holding out something small and innocently white in her right hand, and it was only as he took it that he saw that her hands were shaking. It was a bone of some kind. The surface was pitted with dents and scrapes. Teeth marks. They're all like that, sir. These children weren't murder victims or runaways. They were prey. It was like the words were the key to the door that blocked off the most macabre part of the imagination. It was easy, too easy, to picture some nameless monster down there in the blood and the dark, too simple to feel the children's horror, however short-lived. A knife-edged pain twisted in his gut. God, out there were parents whose children were nothing but bones. Had they even missed them yet, or were they entirely innocent of that terrible fear? His stomach had gone cold and dead, and the remnants of his coffee were a slick weight. The very thought made him want to run straight home, to scoop his daughter into his arms and never, ever let her go. A few minutes ago, I went in a short way, Hawkeye said quietly, and there was a trace of an apology in her voice. There were signs of blood and a struggle. It's possible that there are still some children alive in there somewhere. She held out a hand, slapping her palm against his ununiformed chest as he moved automatically toward the mall of the culvert.
Wait! If there's a chance that there are survivors, then we have to do something,
he said, enunciating each word clearly and not caring if his voice carried to the crowd. She wasn't a parent, so how could she possibly understand? Could she not see that human life was one thing, but the life of a child or a teenager hardly even begun was infinitely more valuable than that of a few soldiers?
I know, but there are arrays all over the walls. I don't want to lead anyone down there without some idea of what we are walking into. Perhaps they're meaningless, but it could be some kind of a trap. Just because it's only attacked children so far, sir, doesn't mean that it wouldn't eat an adult if you crossed its path. We need to wait for an alchemist.
Mace gritted his teeth in frustration. He used to think alchemists were just flashy show-offs. Being around Roy tended to give credibility to that impression. But over the years, he had realized that it was a whole sphere far beyond his understanding. He had picked up a thing or two, but not enough to make even an educated guess on the purpose of most arrays. Of course, no alchemist used the same designs anyway. There were subtle variations in every transmutation, even if their purpose was the same. Hawkeye was right. They needed someone who knew what they were looking at, who could warn them of the dangers rather than just letting them stumble blindly through the dark. But what the hell was taking them so long? Hawkeye seemed to be wondering the same thing, her brown eyes repeatedly drifting to the face of a nearby clock tower, and she drummed her fingers on her hip. It was another 10 minutes before the sleek black car pulled up to the border of the soldiers and Mustang got out, looking furious. He stopped to say something to one of the soldiers, barely blinking at the fumbled salute of surprise he received. The Elrics were with him, both looking pale and tense. Al was staring at the crowd of people, scanning their faces as if he couldn't understand why they were here. Mace could guess how the young man felt. There were always people who would stop to gawp, and their morbid fascination was sickening. It would be far easier if they just went home, but forcing them to leave could bring a confrontation between the army and the people. For now, it was just a storm cloud brewing with potential, and hopefully the tempest would not break today. Ed ignored them completely, as if the mass of people were no more substantial than ghosts. Gold eyes were focused solely on the culvert, as if the young alchemist could see all the secrets contained in its shadows. It was the expression on his face that made Mace uneasy. There was dread there, and plenty of it, but that was not as chilling as the faint trace of weary recognition, as if he were looking on a distant memory brought back to life. Royce stopped at Ed's shoulder, speaking in a voice too low for Mace to hear. In a second, the haunted expression left Ed's face, and a faint, reassuring smile took its place. To an outsider, the exchange looked innocent enough. There was no physical contact, nothing to suggest any level of intimacy beyond superior officer and subordinate, except a very faint softness around the edge of Ed's smile, and the brief flicker of protective concern across Roy's face. Ever since Ed had brought him back from the gate, the attraction between the two of them had been blindingly obvious. Years of knowing them both had left him in absolutely no doubt. Even before he had been shot, there had been something there, some faint spark of something that Ed didn't understand and Roy tried desperately to ignore. The years had changed that, and now all of that tension had shifted, becoming something more gentle, but no less powerful and passionate. He sent a silent prayer of thanks that Roy had taken his advice. There were some things that he could simply not emphasize enough. He knew how precious and short the time any of them had could be. Roy's fears may be valid, to some extent. If the relationship became known, there were far more people who would condemn them for their behavior than praise them for their courage. But as far as Mace could see, there was nothing more worth the risk than the chance of love. This wasn't one of Roy's conquests. This was something deeper than that. Even if the two of them weren't quite sure what to call it yet. He just hoped that they had the time to find out for themselves. "Took you long enough," Mace murmured, smiling faintly as they approached. "Hawkeye said she called you before me. What happened?" Roy's dark eyes flickered with anger and annoyance, but it wasn't directed at anyone present. When he spoke, the words were chosen with great care. Just as well, considering anyone could be listening. "It seems the Fuhrer has decided that he is at personal risk from the events of the past few days. Most of the roads around Central Command and his home have been closed, and guards posted. The city's gridlocked. It would have been quicker to walk." Mace raised an eyebrow in disbelief, noticing that Havoc and Breida had both rolled their eyes, and Hawkeye had let out one pent-up, irritated sigh at the last piece of news. They were all used to being discreet and keeping their opinions to themselves, but it seemed that Hakuro was straining everyone's patience. Taking a deep breath, Hawkeye began to repeat the report she had given him, outlining her suspicions as Roy listened. Mace turned away, not wanting to hear the details a second time. Once had been enough. Instead, he approached the dark hole of the culvert, his eyes picking out scattered bones. True night had drawn in, stretching the sinister shadows out into something far more ominous than just shade. At first, the remains seemed nondescript. Bits of bovine and sheep skeletons were thrown around, and he stirred a skull with his toe, noticing the teeth marks were smaller. Perhaps whatever they were dealing with was still growing. Either that, or it had young to feed. Hawkeye had said the bones formed some kind of nest, and he could see a mound looming in the dusk. The pile was taller than him and about 15 feet across, clogging the tunnel. The foundations appeared to be made of animal bone, but here and there a human skull caught his eyes, gleaming like polished ivory. The ground underneath his feet was dry, but he could hear the steady drip and trickle of stagnant water. Rotten meat and old blood, no doubt seeping down from the slaughterhouse, made the air thick with its stench, adding to the horror of the place. There were occasional arrays picked out on the floor. He stared at them blankly,
not really seeing the designs as his thoughts kept turning to the underground night that lay beyond the nest. Were there children down there somewhere, alone and frightened, perhaps running for their lives or otherwise trapped by a nameless monster? His impatience was growing with every passing heartbeat, and he struggled to maintain his composure. As a soldier, he knew the logical course of action was to err on the side of caution, to devise a strategy which would allow them to eliminate that threat. As a parent, the only thing that mattered to him was those children's lives. They looked like they've been burned in. Roy's voice, calm and controlled as always, broke into his thoughts, making him blink. Mustang was crouched by an array, inspecting the lines carefully in the faltering light of the flame he had brought into existence. It's not drawn or even carved. What did they mean? Mace watched as Roy looked around the immediate area, putting his gloved fingertips to one design after another. He never quite touched the periphery of each circle, lingering a hair's breadth from the geometric shapes as he frowned in confusion. There was no immediate answer, and Mace found himself searching his old friend's face with care. When Ed was around, people had a habit of forgetting how quietly spectacular other alchemists could be. Ed may be remarkable, but in some areas Roy was far more experienced. Until the Elrics had swept into their lives like a thunderstorm, the flame alchemist had been one of the best, calm and controlled with the wildness of his alchemy all around him. Even now, Mace would rather ask his opinion before turning to Ed and Al for help. Somehow, he felt if Mustang could provide the answer, then the problem itself became less. A solution would be just around the corner. That was the level of confidence the man could inspire. No one under Roy's command ever truly believed that they would fail any mission. This time, though, it seemed he was out of luck. Roy sighed, his blue-clad shoulders lifting and falling in a shrug. They're just random arrays. There's no kind of pattern or relationship between them. This one's for transmuting stone, but the one next to it is a change of state for water. It's like an alchemist just drew every array he knew. So it's safe? Dark eyes, black in the gloom, met his, and Roy's lips narrowed into a thin line. Probably not. Even if the arrays are meaningless, there's still a predator in here somewhere. He glanced over towards the nest of bones, and Mace could practically hear the thoughts and strategies churning in his friend's mind. Some people were born soldiers, destined to follow. Others were commanders, fated to lead. Despite his friend's protests that he had only joined up because he looked good in uniform, there was no denying that Roy was one of the talented few. He had never been comfortable with authority, had always thought too long and hard about the consequences to stay low in the ranks. Before, those skills had been rough around the edges, almost perfect, but not quite. In the time he had been gone, it seemed that Roy had honed those talents to something remarkable. His only weakness was his care for his men, and it could only be considered a flaw by the heartless people looking to put Mustang down. "We have to do something," Mace said quietly, staring into the heartless black of the tunnel. "Even if those kids aren't..." He swallowed, feeling sick. "Even if we're too late for them, we can't leave this thing alive to take anyone else." "Of course not. I just feel better if we knew what we were dealing with. Is it an animal, or..." "You think it could be human?" Mace knew he sounded appalled, knew that his emotions were riding far too close to the surface to be professional. But he didn't give a shit. This was above and beyond the call of duty. He knew that alchemists dealt with things, the experimental results of men who had dabbled in playing God. They always spoke of them in dead, flat tones, like it was no more terrifying than going shopping. But it was simple for the trained ear to hear what wasn't being said. Ben brought the creatures from their nightmares to life, made monsters of flesh and fur and soul and intelligence, and then set them free on the world. A sound of disgust from Havoc rang out in the tunnel, cutting off Roy's response. The lieutenant had picked his way cautiously up the sides of the nest and stood in the hollow at its summit,
Sir, I think you need to see this. What is it? There was a moment's pause, punctuated by the hollow clatter of Jean picking his way carefully towards the high edge. In his hands was a large shred of something, about the same size as a grown man's torso. It shimmered slightly in the gloom, etched with lines and patches. Looks like some kind of skin. Like something's shedding. This is one of the smaller pieces. Havoc looked over his shoulder and back up again. Whatever it is, it's huge, and probably getting bigger. Roy nodded, making no comment at the dread in the younger man's voice. Instead, he looked back out at the world, scanning the gathered crowd and the restless soldiers guarding the periphery. Fulman, Fury, stay outside. Don't let anyone in. It's not going to be long before the rumors spread. I don't care who wants access. Distraught parents, police, even the Fuhrer. No one is to come anywhere near this place. The rest of us will search for any survivors and see if we can find out what we're dealing with. If we need reinforcements, we'll come back here to regroup. Do I make myself clear? There were nods all around. Fulman and Fury hurried toward the exit as the others turned toward the darkness. The only way around the nest was over it, and Mace grimaced as bones cracked and clattered underfoot. Everyone trod carefully, as though it were eggshells strewn beneath their feet. Skulls fractured and smaller bones skittered down, rattling like dice as they hit the tunnel floor. By the time he reached Havoc's side, Mace's skin was crawling. Everything about this place was repulsive, from the stench to the lank, heavy feeling in the air. Jean was smoking a cigarette ferociously, writhing himself in sweet-smelling smoke. He was still turning the piece of skin over and over in his hands, frowning at the mottled patterns. There were other, bigger husks, curled and caught on shattered bone edges. Tugging one fragment free, Mace frowned, running his fingertips over the surface. He had seen something like this before, and when his memory stirred, he felt the last of his warmth leave him. "This is snakeskin," he said quietly. "Jean was right. It's growing if it's shedding skin like this." "That's a fucking big snake," Breeda muttered. His face glossed with nervous sweat as he stirred the bones with his foot. "If it's been eating all of this..." "A normal snake couldn't eat this much. Even man-eaters only feed once a month or so," Mace replied, letting the piece of skin fall to the floor. It drifted down, no heavier than a feather. "This is something else. It can't have been around for more than about a week. Surely someone would have noticed something." "Only if they were paying attention," Roy pointed out quietly. "From the look of it, this thing started off by eating animals. Who's going to notice a couple of missing sheep or cows?" His expression was grim, almost identical to the one on Riza's face. If either of them were horrified by this, they were hiding it well. Although there were still faint signs. Hawkeye's gun was in her hand, a steady weight in her palm. Roy's fingers were rubbing together, as if he longed to click and let the whole place burn. Havoc threw his cigarette over the edge and into the waiting darkness. Its tip glowed like a falling star, flaring briefly before it dashed apart on the ground. He ran a hand through his hair and reached for another, before thinking again and resting his hand on his revolver instead. Breeda was just as edgy, fists clenched as he stared into the featureless tunnel. Finally, Mace looked at Ed and Al. The younger brother was pale, his gray eyes huge and intense, and his gloved hands were flexing at his sides, ready to clap at a moment's notice. He was doing his best to ignore the vile evidence around him, but his gaze kept skittering back down to the bones at his feet, and Mace could see him swallowing back nausea. Ed stood at his brother's side, staring out into the tunnel. Once in a while he would glance at the arrays which continued on into the darkness, etched at odd intervals into the walls. His arms were crossed over his chest, and his lips were wrenched into a disgusted grimace. Abruptly, he cocked his head and narrowed his eyes,
the drum of his flesh fingers on his automail arm pausing as he struggled to listen.
"Did you hear that?" he asked, looking around as the others froze, straining their ears to catch any sound other than the steady drip and trickle of water and the crunch of shifting bones underfoot.
"Daddy!"
The little girl's scream was desperate, shrill and high with terror. Splashing footsteps rang out through the tunnel, but there was no telling where they came from. Beyond where they stood was a maze of drains and sewers, and the echoes bounced back and forth, impossible to pinpoint.
"Daddy, help me!"
Mace's chest went tight, muscles locking and making his breath wheeze between his lips, his heart turning dead in his chest as his veins filled with ice water, and repulsion became bottomless fear. He knew that voice. He heard it every day, and, until now, it had always been music in his ears. "Alicia,"